it's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Yeah, good morning, America. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to the 2A Radio Show. Second Amendment Radio is the actual name of the program. The website, 2aradio.com. You get all kinds of news and information. Of course, all of the archives since the inception of the show, just a little over 2 years ago. We are on our two-hour Sunday weekend format, so good morning to all of you out there in America land that are listening live, and those of you who are now picking up the post-show rebroadcast, or if you happen to be on the archives page, thank you very much for tuning in. I did not do a show last week. The reason is I was moving. I'd been in the house for about 4.5 years, and I moved, found a new place. It was a 3-day weekend. I was able to get some help. Man, I got to tell you, a good friend of mine who lives in California, he actually owns his own moving business. I should say he's kind of pretty much getting out of it. He's got his couple of trucks for sale. He had some contracts with the federal government, Department of Defense, doing a bunch of moving, and he lost those contracts. But anyhow, he'd been doing that for years, all kinds of gear and equipment, lives about 3 hours away. Drove out here, brought all of his gear and things such as that, and rented a U-Haul, and for 3 solid days, just for being a buddy, helped me out. Packing up the house, getting everything all moved over. The only thing he didn't do was help us set up. He helped us, last Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We also did stuff Monday, so there was 4 days, but my buddy Eric, actually, he was not here on Monday, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday, came out, and just for being a good friend, actually came out, drove 3 hours, stayed at the house, helped us with this just massive move. I got to tell you, it is time for me to severely wean down the stuff that I own. Three 26-foot U-Haul loads is what it took to get out of my old house, moved over to my new house. And I actually have a storage unit with some stuff in it. Now, most of the stuff in storage is actually junk. All that's going to go to the dump. But there are some good things in there. I've got some tools, air compressor, blah, da, 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 da. You know, some guy-type stuff. And I'll put stuff in, take stuff out, things like that. I am sick and tired of having a storage unit. I no longer want to have a storage unit. As a matter of fact, I've been checking places like Craigslist and the Nifty Nickel things, a local paper like that, for anybody that has a shed in my neck of the woods that I can go pick up and put in the backyard of my new place so that I can put a bunch of stuff that I need to keep but don't need to use on a regular basis in the shed. So I can actually park cars in the garage rather than having garage as storage and then also have a storage. I hate all that. So I'm going to take what is about 3 and maybe a third 26-foot trucks worth of stuff and wean it down to 2 trucks worth of stuff. Therefore, I could either have a single semi-trailer pick us up and move us, a.k.a. a shipping container, or a pair of 26-foot rental trucks. So that's going to be my project throughout the summer, to wean everything down. Luckily now, I only live about 3 miles or so from the county landfill, so I can load up stuff in the trailer and take it over there to the dump and just get rid of it. About another mile and a half up the road happens to be the Salvation Army, so the stuff that's worth donating, I can donate. A lot of churches around here and things for donation and such. Let's see, this last Friday, I normally go to a meeting that we have, just a group of local concerned citizens, local guys. Every Friday morning, have breakfast, and this last Friday was the first time I'd gone in at least a couple of months, probably 2.5 months. I've been so miserably busy. It might even be closer to 3 months. But I went, got caught up on a number of things. And I got to tell you, the status of the local politics where I live is no different than anywhere else in the country. It's just, it's a mess. It really is. The single biggest problem that I see with politicians in this day and age, it used to be that the politicians represented us, we the people. Now, they believe that we elect them because we like their ideas, so go with what you want because we're going to back you on it. That's not the way it is. Now, that may have been prior to modern communications. Somebody gets elected from Missouri. They travel by horse and buggy to Washington, D.C. in the early 1800s. Before there was even a rail system to get them there. It takes them weeks to get there. They can't very well ask the constituents, look, something has come up you guys might not know about. What do you think about us being able to handle it? Well, that's not the way things are now. Now you can get a relatively instant day in exchange feedback on things from we the people, the actual bosses. Now, I've got to tell you, I hate the idea of where you go into like a county meeting or a city council meeting or that of your town advisory board or something like that. And they're all sitting up behind desks above everyone else on an elevated platform looking down upon the citizens. They give you a time limit, be it 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever, to speak your piece, oftentimes interrupting you and getting involved in some sort of a discussion to take away from what your point is, all while your clock is running and they're burning the time. Well, that same sort of thing happens here. As a matter of fact, we don't have a city of Pahrump. We have a town of Pahrump and an actual town board that does, in fact, wield some authority and control some budget. They have a town office. They have a town manager. There's 50-some people who work for the town, but the actual town board members themselves, the five town board members, are unpaid. It's all voluntary. And one of the arguments that comes from a couple of them on a pretty regular basis, look, I'm doing the best I can do considering the rate of pay. Really? Now, what a cop-out. Before you ever decided to run for that job, you knew that there was no rate of pay. So I guess we're getting what we pay for, aren't we? A lousy group that doesn't seem to have any sort of concise effort or direction in where they're going or what they're doing. Some of them want to listen to the people of the town. Others would much rather do all of the town business without any public input whatsoever because they believe, those few believe, that the town elected them based on how they feel about things, not truly representative. We're going to talk about a number of these sorts of occurrences on the state and federal levels after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back to the show. Now, you're obviously all familiar, if you've listened to this show at any point in time whatsoever, about the Project Gun Runner, or Gun Walker, whatever it might be, that the ATF was involved in, where they provided not only safe haven for suspected Mexican gun runners to purchase firearms from FFL dealers, but also ran protection for them to get to the border and then across it with American-purchased semi-automatic firearms. Now, they did this in an effort to up the numbers of American gun shop purchased guns that are found at Mexican crime scenes. Because their claim of 85 to 90% of all guns seized at Mexican crime scenes originated from the U.S. Now, huge holes in that argument. We've discussed the entire thing. It's into single-digit percentages, not 85 to 90%. 90% is actually what Barack Obama said. He actually claimed 90%. Okay, total lie. As we know, there is one poker-faced telltale sign that you know when a public official of any kind is lying. That's when there's media in front of them and they're speaking. If there's any form of media in front of them and they're speaking, they're lying. That's a telltale sign. Only two or three are exempt from that. And I haven't seen much of them. Well, this entire Project Gunwalker or Gunrunner or Fast and Furious, whatever the heck you want to call these, whatever they came, they all originated out of the Phoenix office of the ATF. BATF, the Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms, or Bureaucrats Trafficking Firearms. Anyhow, the ATF office out of Phoenix has gone through a complete and major overhaul of everyone there. Their special agent in charge, their SAC, their ASAC, the assistant special agent in charge, and all of the main people behind Project Gunrunner / Walker and Fast and Furious have all been reassigned. Either moved out of the area or reassigned to liaise with other federal departments right there in the Phoenix area. Most of them are gone. So there's an end to this project. Now, the ATF has a responsibility to follow the Constitution. All of the agents do. And to allow illegal behavior, in fact, support the illegal behavior, and then run protection guarding the illegal behavior, is a violation of their oaths. Everyone involved, from the top down, should be in prison. Now, of course, we've had Daryl Issa, and I forget who it is, the Senator Charles Grassley, that's the other one. Representative Issa and Senator Grassley have both been looking very, very hard into the ATF, very, very hard into Project Gunrunner / Walker and Fast and Furious. And they've been getting all but stonewalled. Well, as it turns out, it's no longer just a Republican versus Democrat sort of thing. Because just a couple of days ago, 31 U.S. House members, all Democrats, wrote to Barack Obama, urging him to end administration stonewalling on the BATFE Project Gunrunner / Walker and the Fast and Furious programs under which border state dealers were encouraged to sell thousands of guns to suspicious buyers. In the letter, it was spearheaded by Representative Jason Altmaier, Democrat out of Pennsylvania. All of the lawmakers called for the investigative tactics. They called them extremely troubling and found the Justice Department's failure to provide information to congressional investigators equally troubling, saying that the Americans deserve prompt and complete answers. The letter concluded with a call for the administration to help, quote, get to the bottom of this serious allegation of federal law enforcement misconduct. So it's now spanning across. Even some of the Democrats are embarrassed as to what's happening in the Democrat-controlled executive branch coming out of the White House. They're embarrassed. They realize that some unscrupulous and illegal behavior's been happening behind this curtain. And now they're on board with wanting to get things figured out. Now, let's also keep in mind, all sorts of things have happened under the Obama regime in this country in the last 2.5 years, that if it were any other president, especially any Republican president, they'd be absolutely raked over the public coals. Absolutely raked over the coals. Apologizing for the United States of America. Suggesting, not just suggesting, saying that our American flag represents oppression to certain people throughout the world. Really? What do you think the North Korean flag, the Chinese flag, the old Soviet flag, the Cuban flag, what do you think those represent? Well, downplaying our military. Of course, we're also talking about a wartime president who, in fact, escalated a war in Afghanistan and won the Nobel Peace Prize while doing it. Escalating a war and won the Nobel Peace Prize. Folks, this goes to show you just how rigged all politics from your little town, rural area into the cities, counties, states, federal, and international arenas truly are. It's all rigged. Under the true terms of the Nobel Peace Prize, no warring president, in the act of amping up and increasing a war effort, would have ever even been considered for a Nobel Peace Prize. Plus, you have Obama actually has a couple of, what was it? Was it Grammys? For the audio portions of his book? Seriously? He has Grammy Awards. Grammy Awards, a Nobel Peace Prize, and we have no idea concretely where this guy was born, where he went to college, what he did while he was in college, anything about his family history. We know virtually nothing about this guy. Yet, he's in charge exclusively of the executive branch of government here in the United States. A guy who was issued, ordered, or allowed his underlings to issue orders to provide avenues for suspicious buyers to buy thousands upon thousands of guns, then provide protection for them to run into Mexico and cross the border with these guns and ammunition. A gun is no good without ammunition. Ammunition is no good without a gun. It's like a vehicle is absolutely no good without fuel. And that fuel will get you nowhere without a vehicle to put it in. Just the way guns and ammo work. Well, considering all of this, and seeing that the Obama regime is going to have a bit of a difficult time coming up in the next election cycle, some of these Democrats really want to see what's going on. And if they need to distance themselves a little bit, rather than riding the coattails, they will. They did take a shellacking last November, and we'll see how it goes coming up November after next. We're going to get into a couple of things dealing with a man who was claiming that his rights were violated when police seized his guns when he's doing nothing illegal. We'll talk about that after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys. And packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back from the break. Now, in order to really get the attention of the elected officials and otherwise police authorities in any given community or area, you must have an incredibly noticeable contingent of citizens working towards the same goal peacefully. Now, you can obviously have some shock and awe. However, in mass, this is where it works out best. Specifically, we're going to talk about gun rights. Now, it may be legal to carry a gun exposed and loaded where you live. It may be legal to carry one unloaded but exposed where you live. However, depending on where you live, it may not be what we would refer to as socially acceptable. Now, I could care less about social acceptability. However, over a long period of time, that's when these sort of things happen. We'll give you an example. I live in rural Nevada. Open carry of guns is just fine around here. I walk into my bank carrying my 1911. If I go into Las Vegas, I oftentimes carry there as well. However, generally in Las Vegas when I carry, I will generally carry a Glock, and I'll wear some decent slacks, a polo shirt that's tucked in, a nice belt. I will look the part. Where I live out in the rural area of Pahrump, I don't really care. I'll wear my, you know, baggy shorts and my t-shirt and whatever, just because out here we pack heat. We carry guns. In Vegas, it looks less socially accepting. It's more cosmopolitan. So I will dress the part. Now, if I walk up and down the Las Vegas Strip with that gun, it's still just as legal. However, I'm going to get harassed by the cops because it's not socially acceptable. And the way they look at it is we have all these tourists from all over the world, and many of them are never exposed to people walking around with loaded armed guns. And they don't want to run people off and scare people from coming back, especially in today's day and age of blogs and internet readings and people doing research before they go places. And somebody from Laos might be here on some Laotian blog say, I saw people walking around with guns and, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I have no idea what the gun laws are in Laos or what a Laotian may think of it. I'm just making an example. Therefore, the Laotians with money might not ever come to Las Vegas, and the people in Las Vegas, mainly the people who run Las Vegas, the Clark County Convention Visitors Authority, don't want people to not come because of something like that. And the cops also know this because they get money from the county, the city, all these other places. Everything is run by tourism. It's all trickle-down economics, starting with the tourist who spends money or loses money, however it may be. So in this case, the cops are going to be, you know, on it. In order to make an effect of this, you'd want to have literally hundreds of people that would walk the strip with guns if you wanted to make some sort of a social change. Now, in this case, it's pretty much on Las Vegas Strip. The rest of Vegas, you can carry guns. It's not really something that happens very often, but the cops are at least aware that it's legal. Okay, at least a vast majority of them are. Some of the stupid ones might not be. Some of the ones that don't pay attention. I'm about to read you a story coming out of Ohio where carrying a gun is legal. But one man did it, and this one man went well above and beyond, kind of the step approach to getting it done in what most people would think of as kind of a reasonable fashion. Now, what he did was legal, but it wasn't necessarily well thought out, in my opinion. In my opinion, to well think it out, you get dozens, if not hundreds or even thousands of people to do the same thing. And it's even good to let the cops know beforehand, look, we have rights, here they are. We realize that these aren't things that happen generally on a daily basis in our town, city, state, whatever. But as a group, we're going to be exercising them here this amount of time. This is where we're going to go over here and we're going to do this. And just want to let you know, because you might get some calls. Just want to let you know. No laws are going to be getting broken. This is what we're going to do. Not that you have to do that. I'm telling you the smart way of doing things. Not the only way of doing things. Just the smart way of doing things. Well, a man in Ohio said that the city, actually, I shouldn't say he said, but the city that he lives in has until June 7th to respond to a complaint filed by a man who claims his constitutional rights were violated when two police officers ordered him to the ground outside of a Walgreens, a drugstore, and seized two guns he was carrying. The case was initially filed in Summit County Commons Pleas Court April 11th, but was moved May 11th to the U.S. District Court in the Northern District of Ohio, the Eastern Division. It's been assigned to Judge John R. Adams. John Adams. Great name for a judge, you would think. The case was moved to federal court because it deals with issues involving rights protected under the U.S. Constitution, according to court documents. Matthew Butcher, his complaint, names as defendant the city of Cuyahoga Falls, Mayor Don L. Robart, and the city of Cuyahoga Falls Police Department, former Cuyahoga Falls Police Chief John Conley, former patrolman slash officer James McGowan, and officer slash patrolman Brian Anders, and three other officers whose names were not in the complaint. The city and its officials are being represented by John T. McClarich and Tammy Z. Hannon, attorneys with Marzenick, Radskin, Ryder, Keller, and Keller of Cleveland, Ohio. Neither Butcher nor McLaren has responded to any sort of inquest seeking comment as of the time of the writing of this article. In the complaint, Butcher claims his rights were violated under the First, Second, and Fourth Amendments to the U.S. Constitution, as well as the Constitution of the State of Ohio and Ohio Revised Codes and Common Law. He alleges he was the victim of false imprisonment, assault, and battery, and he was in, quote, fear of being subject to deadly force by having a loaded firearm pointed at him by a police officer. He's seeking $25,000 in damages. The complaint also alleges Butcher's rights to engage in free speech under the Constitution, including symbolic speech, were violated on April 3, 2010. Responding to a report of a man, quote, carrying a rifle across his back and a handgun on his hip, police spotted Butcher standing in front of the Walgreens at State Road and Schiller Avenue, the incident report stated. Two officers, quote, approached him and were able to prone him out without incident. That means pull out their guns, do a 90-degree angle on the guy, get him to, you know, put his hands up, get on the ground. Butcher had an unloaded AK-47, as well as a loaded handgun on his hip, which were plainly visible, the report said. Butcher states Butcher states in his complaint, that he did it, quote, in order to educate the public to the right to open carry firearms in Ohio. Okay. Good idea, bad implementation, in the way I see it. Mr. Butcher is a strong believer in the Second Amendment, as he puts it, according to McGowan. He believes that guarantees of his rights to carry handguns in plain view of anyone. It appears from his actions he intends to push this as far as possible. Now, Butcher has a permit to carry concealed weapons, McGowan said, and he was not cited. In his complaint, Butcher says the officers forcibly ordered him to lie face down on the ground and that he immediately complied while at gunpoint. We'll talk more about this after the break. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back, everyone. We're talking about this case out of Ohio, where a fellow by the name of Butcher is suing the city for violating his rights because he stood outside of a Walgreens, which is a, if you're unfamiliar, it's a drugstore chain, with a loaded handgun on his hip and an AK-47 unloaded slung across his shoulder. Now, I'm a gun guy. I would certainly take notice of that before going into the Walgreens if I saw that, even in my incredibly gun-friendly town. Why is this guy toting around an AK-47, a battle rifle, standing out there? Okay, it would raise concern. I wouldn't be so concerned about the law. I'd be a little bit more concerned about the intentions. If I managed the store, I'd be even more concerned because it'd be running off business, and not everybody's going to walk in there. He wanted to raise attention to being able to carry guns. Okay, that is an incredibly honorable thing to do, to want to do. However, the way this guy did it, he's going to attract negative attention to himself. Okay, he's going to get the cops out there. They're going to prone them out. They're going to take the guns for what they call safekeeping. Now, all of what the cops are going to do is going to be illegal. However, it is socially acceptable, which is the real problem. It is really the feminization of the entire American populace. If it's good for a little girl, it's good for everybody else. If a little girl would be offended by it, you can't do it. What happens now if kids are out, a couple of boys are out, being boys, on the playground, and they hold up their fingers like they're guns, and they're like, you know, pew, pew, or bang, bang, bang. What happens? Well, they get scooped up, sent to the dean/principal's office, reprimanded, suspended, in order to have a psychological evaluation, and in many cases not allowed back in unless they're put on some sort of psychosis drug, like Ritalin or Adderall. For boys being boys, because a little girl might be offended or consider that to be socially unacceptable. Now, being as how this is the way that law enforcement exists rather than police. Again, law enforcement is a group of people that believe they are directed and they believe it is their responsibility to enforce every single law that's on the books. Rather than police or a peace officer, whose job it is, keep the peace, make sure things go smooth. They don't worry about victimless crimes. You want an example of a victimless crime? How about this? A seatbelt law. You're driving around, not wearing your seatbelt, and they actually have a seatbelt checkpoint on a public roadway. Now, that public roadway is owned by the public. The only people that they can constitutionally and legally enforce anything upon would be commercial traffic, because the roads and highway systems were paid for by public money for public use. If you can have commercial use, you can license and regulate all that kind of stuff. But cops actually stopping people, if you're not wearing a seatbelt, they cite you. That's law enforcement. It damn sure is not anything at all to do with being a peace officer or even policing. You can see the differences. So, they prone this guy out. They hook him up. They didn't cite him or charge him, but they did take his guns. So he's filed suit against him. Quite honestly, as he should. Here's my point. A better way of going about this, get together with a group of people and have the group, in some organized fashion, take on a similar message. And not to freak the cops out, let them know in advance. Look, you don't really want to be at odds with the cops. It may work out for your favor in the long run, but when they show up not knowing what's going on, it's going to suck for you. And of course, you can say whatever you want, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to suffer the consequences at the moment. There's people that drive around throughout this country, and every time they see a cop, they put their hand out the window and they flip off the cop. Oftentimes, they get pulled over. Then when they get pulled over, incited or harassed or stopped or whatever it might be, merely for flipping the bird off to the cop, they sue because that's a freedom of speech, right? And they cash in on that. A couple of years later, once it actually gets to some judge, it says, okay, yeah, you can cash in on that. Kind of an odd way of going about it. Not that if you ever need the cops for anything, they're not going to remember that. You really don't want to try to be at the odds of cops. You don't want to try to be. I don't try to be. I just try to avoid the cops. And I'm a former cop. I was a patrol officer in two of the three or even four just lousiest hood areas around in and around Las Vegas during swing shift of all heightened times. So I know what it's like to be a cop in a busy urban area with a whole lot of stuff going on and a whole bunch of bad guys that didn't get very good parenting at home where it all starts. So anyhow, this guy, Butcher in Ohio, although he had proper intentions, his execution of going about it, I believe, would, in just about any place in America, garnish a negative response from the police and from the community. Not to say that what he did was illegal. It's not illegal. And I support him and anyone exercising their rights and their legalities. In this case, the way I see the way that he executed exercising his rights and his freedom of speech and his opinion, the execution of that was misplaced, in my opinion. I would not do that. I would not condone people doing it. However, at the same time, I don't condemn people that have done it. I'm just letting you know. You have to expect the type of response that he got. Cops show up, guns come out, he gets proned out, he gets hooked up. There is an interview of some kind that can last for up to 1 hour. And at which point in time, they must decide then whether or not charges are to be filed and he's to be arrested or cited, or no charges filed, blah, 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 and let the man go. Whether or not to take his guns into safekeeping is entirely going to be the way that things operate with that cop in that department that they work for. Now, in this case, if they'd said, all right, fine, you're not breaking any laws, but we're going to take your guns into safekeeping, so you can't do this. Otherwise, they would have been, all right, well, we're not going to take your guns. What would Butcher have been doing afterwards? He'd probably still be standing there an hour later after the cops left. Well, the cops don't want that, so they will violate your rights, take possession of your property in violation of the law in an effort to stop that because of the social acceptedness. If it was not socially acceptable, or if what Butcher did was not socially acceptable, and you and the people in your community believe that it should be socially acceptable, even though it's legal, it's not socially acceptable at the time, you need to have a concise effort and a plan, like a business plan, like a game plan, some sort of a plan to really start reinstituting this. Not all of a sudden everybody standing outside of the door of every public building or every public conveyance in town and not letting the cops know about it. That's going to be an ugly situation. That's where people who are on the fence about this whole gun thing and protecting yourself might just be pushed over the fence and now are like, yeah, you know what? These guys are crazies, and I don't want to have anything to do with them. What is the perception of the gun owner in the eyes of the average American? A beer-bellied, scruffy, beer-drinking, out of a can, might I add, shotgunning out of the bed of a four-wheel drive pickup with a roll bar and a bunch of off-road KC lights on it, hillbilly. Out there shooting up the cans after they empty them into their belly. That is the common misperception of the average gun owner in America. And who do we have to blame for that? We have ourselves. Because those liquored up, beer drinking, scruffy hillbillies shooting out of the back of a blue Chevy pickup whatever it might be, that image, they do exist. And unfortunately, those same guys oftentimes make YouTube videos and post them. Doesn't help our cause, guys. That is an anchor that weighs the rest of us down. I support you to have your gun rights. Trust me, that's why I do this show. Just don't exercise them in a very stupid or negative manner. Otherwise, you're doing more harm than good. Two steps forward, one step back. Why don't we just take two steps forward? Why don't we take two steps forward with our hands locked together, ready to grab our guns if bad guys come? It's not shiny, happy people holding hands. It's armed Americans that have a little bit of underbelly and no yellow streak down their sissy schoolgirl back. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come after the break. We'll be back after the news. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, I'm going to tune up for you a story that we first talked about a little over a year ago, stemming from a case which is 3 years old from April 2008, when San Luis Obispo County, California Sheriff's Deputy Darren Murphy responded to a shots being fired call in April of 2008. He decided en route that he's going to make some kind of an arrest. Before he ever even got there, somebody's going to get arrested. Now, we know this because there's video and audio of this entire incident. Well, Deputy Murphy did far more than that. Murphy and other deputies made an unwarranted entry into a home and then into a locked gun safe. Murphy's uncensored and darkly disturbing observations and behavior following his Code 3 lights and sirens arrival at the rural home of longtime San Luis Obispo County resident Matt Hart were picked up by Murphy's and other deputies' own recorders. Those recordings, they provide a rare and pretty frightening, revealing, behind-the-scenes perspective of how way too many cops in local law enforcement agencies view the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and other laws that its personnel are sworn to uphold. Now, the spinner of the Sheriff's Department, Rob Byrne, declined to confirm the identities of any of the deputies appearing or being heard in the recordings, or to discuss any aspect of Matt Hart's home invasion by armed cops. Okay, well, you can actually go online and search this under the name, under Matt Hart and San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Deputies. You can even put in just Deputy Darren Murphy and just search that in any search engine, and you can actually see the CCN TV report. Now, deputies, their department in the field has really exhibited their, in their own words, as well as their plainly audible efforts to fabricate justifications for their actions they'd already had taken, are completely lamentable. Local county prosecutors' subsequent abuse of power wielded in a very cavalier, clumsy, and transparent effort to avoid a lawsuit is also very troubling. But in the larger scheme of things, it's the systematic dismantling of the Fourth Amendment by overzealous cops and enabling judiciaries that should be cause for concern for every American citizen. Incredibly, Matt Hart's case may be less of an anomaly than it appears. The question is, should cops like Deputy Darren Murphy be allowed to make day-to-day life-changing decisions regarding the fate of law-abiding citizens? I say no. Now, what happened in this case with Matt Hart, he lives in a rural area of San Luis Obispo County, which is kind of central coast area of California, lives inland, on a two-acre property. He had set up, as he has many, many, many times over the years, on his property, not far from his trailer home, a single-shot .22 caliber rifle on a bench, on a table, had set up a target with a safe downrange backstop where the property actually goes dramatically up. So he had his own berm, plus he had the target in front of a very large tree stump. So he had the target, the tree stump, and a berm behind it. And he'd been doing this for years. He's just out there doing a little target practicing off of a bench. The cops show up, pull out their AR-15, start yelling at him, starting by calling him buddy. Not announcing that they're cops, just, hey buddy, hey buddy. They get him out, tell him not to do anything stupid or they're going to blast at him. One of the cops climbs over the locked fence. It's like a cattle guard sort of a fence, you know. Hooks him up. They decide after they have him in custody that they should clear his home. He's told him he's the only one there. There's nobody else. They decide, yeah, we should clear the home. So five deputies climb over the locked fence, go into the guy's home, clear it. They don't find anyone in there. But they do find a locked gun safe. So they go back out. Deputy Murphy says, we need your keys. Of course, Hart says, I do not authorize you, give you permission whatsoever to search my home. You are not allowed in my home. Do not search my home. I do not give you permission to search my home. They said, too bad. We're going to search it. And he says, you have no authority to do that in this situation. The response, well, that might be what you believe, but, you know, we believe differently. He asked Matt Hart for his keys so they can go into the house and open the gun safe. He refuses. After three or four refusals, they finally take the keys. They were clipped through a belt loop on the front of his pants. They take the keys. They go in there. They start admiring his quote-unquote armament. Seize all of his guns. Then afterwards, after a detective shows up, they start fabricating the reason. This is all caught on audio and some of it on video. Fabricating the reason together. Okay, how do we articulate why we went in there? Can we use exigent circumstances? Under exigent circumstances. You know how they used it? There might be somebody locked up in that gun safe. Why? They found a single article of woman's clothing in the house. An article of clothing that had belonged to the woman that Matt Hart was dating. She had left an article of clothing. Oh, there might be a woman inside here. Is that exigent circumstance? No. Let's go get yourself a search warrant and articulate on that search warrant under oath what you're looking for and why you're looking for it and what reason got you to that point of looking for it. Absolute rights violations. So, add that to what happened in Indiana a couple of weeks ago, where the Indiana State Supreme Court said that residents of Indiana are not allowed to resist when cops come into their house, even if it's an illegal search, an illegal entry, an illegal warrantless entry into their home. The people are not allowed to resist when cops perform an illegal entry into their home. Well, suffice to say, if I were a resident of Indiana and the police did an illegal, warrantless search into my home, the police would get shot by me, regardless of what the state Supreme Court says. Because the Magna Carta, we're talking about back into the 1200s, says differently. And the state Supreme Court cannot tell me that they have the authority to debunk the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Fourth Amendment is falling, and the police state is rising. It's up to you and I to actually, not just talk about doing something, actually physically do something about it. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, getting back on this whole thing with Deputy Murphy and the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department and their illegal search into Matt Hart's residence back in April of 2008. Well, this most notorious badge-toting lawbreaker has chosen the December issue of Playboy magazine to make his first public comments regarding his brazen unconstitutional raid of Matt Hart's home. Now, San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Deputy, I'm going to read this to you, Darren Murphy, broke his silence in the forum section of the men's magazine, saying that a 23-minute video produced by Central Coast News Agency and posted on KCCN.TV caused him to be maligned online. Comments made in the video by Murphy and a handful of acquiescent associates, I guess we could call them, were captured with their own recorders. Now, people who watch the video will see and hear the deputies manufacturing the cause to enter the home after they'd already entered it, and then a gun safe after they'd gone in there, and then colluding to bring a pocket of bogus charges against the homeowner, Matt Hart. Now, here's a quote. "The Hart Locker, SLO Sheriff's, sacking the Fourth Amendment. It's been viewed by more than 2.8 million people worldwide. Murphy's letter to Playboy has created a new national interest in the documentary, and KCCN.TV has been receiving dozens of comments from viewers across the nation. Neither Murphy nor his department supervisors have ever commented on the video from San Luis Obispo County consumption. In the forum section of the magazine under the heading Can the camera lie? Murphy writes the following. As a 27-year veteran of street patrol work, I am encouraged by Martin Preeb's observations in August, Life on Camera, about the ambiguity cops face every day. This past summer, a website posted squad car footage taken 2 years ago during my arrest of a man in an incident involving the use of a firearm. This selectively edited footage caused me to be maligned online. When our department installed dashboard cameras 25 years ago, I was one of the few deputies in favor of the sergeant in the trunk, telling my co-workers it would save their ass. I guess they have donkeys in the car as well. Now, I'm not so sure. Society has every right to expect officers to perform their duties in a lawful manner. But when the citizenry uses tools intended to protect all parties to wrongfully attack officers, the incentive to put your butt on the line is greatly diminished. A society that makes war with its police had better make friends with its criminals." Darren Murphy, from Astatero, California. Now, the society is not making war with its police. Rather, the law enforcement has already declared war on the citizenry, to which it swears to uphold, protect, and defend, the Constitution of which protects that citizenry. And the citizens are the ones who created the very documents that you swear to uphold, protect, and defend. We are the keepers. We are the power. Well, the Playboy editors responded with, quote, You can view the edited footage of the arrest at www.kccn.tv. The commentators focus on the constitutionality of Murphy and his fellow deputies entering the suspect's home after arresting him in the front yard. That's exactly the way it went down. So, we'll see where this goes. It's interesting that Deputy Murphy says that, you know, it was highly creatively edited. Basically insinuating that that's not the way it went down. If that's the case, why haven't you filed a lawsuit? Why aren't you suing the TV group that put the whole video together? Why not? Everybody else sues. You're in California. I would imagine that if you had the slightest inkling of a case, that you would have attorneys flocking to your door. You couldn't turn them away fast enough. They'd be like flies in the Amityville Horror, asking, pleading, begging on their knees to represent you in a lawsuit to sue the group that put the video together. Something tells me, Deputy Murphy, that that is not what's going down. And, as Ricky Ricardo would say, you have a lot of explaining to do. Moving on. The White House wants to ban gun groups. And there's a statement that says, we're working on it. This comes from the White House gun policy advisor, we call him the gun czar, anti-gun czar, Steve Crowley. On March 15th, the Ides of March, 2 months after the deadly shooting spree in Tucson left Congresswoman Gabby Giffords in critical condition for a short period of time, the nation's leading gun control activists took seats in room 4525 at the Department of Justice to push the Obama regime for more strict firearms regulation. In the hour and a half long meeting, Assistant Attorney General Christopher H. Schroeder, who has coordinated the government's work on the issue, went around a long conference table soliciting views from representatives of the major advocacy and law enforcement groups. But the official that the advocates wanted to hear from was mostly staid and mostly quiet. The silence of gun czar, anti-gun czar, Steve Crowley, the White House's point man on gun regulation policy, echoes the decision by the Democrats to remain mute on gun issues as a national issue, even in the wake of the Tucson tragedy. Crowley's keep-your-head-down approach is in keeping with President Obama's preference for low-key wonks, but in this case, his reticence has more to do with political reality. Democrats have no plans for serious gun control initiatives, and the Gabby Giffords strategy, as heart-rending as it was, hasn't changed their minds. The result for Crowley is a kind of a tree falls in the woods conundrum. If President Obama, like just about every other leading Democrat, has abandoned the issue, does the administration's gun policy even exist? Crowley is undeniably present, but he didn't make a sound at the meeting. The kind of the buzz-cut gun owner with sharp cheekboned and genius for regulatory law is, according to multiple advocates, on a listening tour. Activists with whom Crowley has been conferred described him as kind of an enigmatic. Though their conservations have yielded certainly strong impressions, Crowley, who since August has been Obama's assistant for justice on regulatory policy, favors closing a loophole that would allow unlicensed gun dealers to sell arms without background checks. We're talking about this gun show loophole, this mythical thing, especially, of course, at gun shows. His background in administrative law has especially prepared him for figuring out how state agencies can make their records readily available to a federal gun database. We'll carry on a little bit more about this. There's some interesting things that happened in this March 15th meeting. We'll get to those, finish up after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back. Now, again, we're talking about this government put together anti-gun meeting that happened this last March 15th. We're just finding out about one area in which gun czar Steve Crowley had shown less interest, according to several people who have spoken with him about the issue. Is restricting high-capacity magazines, large-volume ammunition magazines, as they put it, that allow the Tucson shooter to keep firing. When Paul Helmke, director of the Brady campaign, to absolutely hose every American out of ever to being able to defend themselves against tyranny or violence with a gun, I think that's her official name, when he broached the subject during the March 15th gathering with Crowley, the officials at the meeting promptly adjourned it. Now, why would Brady campaign even be invited to this? Well, because that's the way that the Democrats would like to lean. Why is it that the Democrats haven't gone wholeheartedly anti-gun in nearly 20 years? You know why? When they passed the Clinton-era ban back in 1994, it's been 17 years. They passed that in September of an election year. And that, my friends, is when the Democrats lost all control of Congress. It went all back to the Republicans. The Democrats know not to do this legislatively. Now, here's the ugly truth of it. Although the legislative branch will not tackle high-end gun control, the executive branch, in a termed-out second-term Democratic presidency, would, as I believe, have no reservations whatsoever of launching new regulatory schemes and possibly even executive orders dictating such regulatory schemes to effectively limit all sorts of firearms, magazines, ammunition, and all of the like. Now, Steve Crowley, who characteristically declined to speak based on this article, has a pretty broad portfolio, including good government and transparency issues, civil rights, food safety, and criminal justice policy. Guns have accounted for only a small part of his workload, and it's an issue with which he has little experience, quite notably. But Crowley's friends and colleagues describe the 45-year-old University of Michigan legal scholar as an extraordinary man of Catholic interests and talents. In fact, it's hard to imagine a more presentable face for the administration to spotlight on gun issues. Crowley grew up hunting deer with his father in DeWitt outside of Lansing, Michigan, and went on to attend Yale Law School. He founded a boxing club and was known to hand out black eyes and swollen lips. Quote, he'd taken down 40-50-pound guys that were 40, 50 pounds heavier than him, according to this quote. It says, Robert Riley, a friend at Yale, and son of a former Alabama governor, Bob Riley. A newsletter at Berkeley Law School, where Crowley taught in 2000, advised new students to add the jazz pianist Stephen Crowley Trio to their CD collection and to, quote, relax and enjoy drinks at Yoshi's with this consummate pianist and tort therapist. This fall, he will preview a documentary with Dutch farmers and gay residents in Shigautuk, Michigan, that he made with his wife, Bridget McCormick. She has a D.C. Hollywood insider in her family. Her sister's actress, Mary Catherine McCormick, who played Deputy National Security Advisor Kate Harper in The West Wing, and Mary Matlin's blonde associate in HBO's K Street. Crowley himself has movie star good looks. In 2006, the irreverent legal blog Above the Law named him a finalist in the, quote, Law School Dean Hotties contest. They say Steve Crowley is the Tom Cruise lookalike. I have no idea what this guy looks like, or what difference this really makes in this article. More relevant to his current belief, Crowley's theoretical performance of law, blah, blah, blah. Who really cares? Here he says, if you think of guns as the intersection of regulatory policy and torts, then nothing makes more sense than a professor specializing in regulation, policy, and torts to work on gun policy, said Roderick Hills, a law professor at New York University and an old friend of Crowley's. He suggested that if the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Second Amendment shaped a keyhole for regulation, Crowley's job is to make skeleton keys that fit the keyhole. Quote, he's the right guy, Hill says. The NRA has yet to make Crowley in any sort of acquaintance. Quote, he has zero interaction with us, said Andrew Acrolendium, the NRA's director of public affairs. One reason that for that lack of interaction, the NRA turned down an invitation to the March 15th session that Crowley had attended. Now, I have to say this to the NRA, that's just plain stupid. That is just plain stupid. When the enemy invites you to sit down and chat a little bit about what their battle plans against your fight are, and you refuse to go, I have to say, National Rifle Association, that is a monumentally stupid decision. I don't care what's going on. If it's in the middle of your annual convention, you send somebody to that meeting. That is monumentally stupid. In recent meetings, Crowley's been less revealing about his views of regulation than he was in his 2008 book entitled Regulation and Public Interest, The Possibility of Good Regulatory Government. In that book, he writes, the evolution of the regulatory state has not been gradual, but rather reflects accelerated growth in response to periods of crisis and national trauma. In this light, regulation seems not only ubiquitous, but inevitable. What he's saying is, never let a good tragedy go to waste. Look at World War II. Huge rights violations by the government, but because we were a wartime, the rest of the citizenry was going to say, okay, and the Supreme Court wouldn't listen to the cases because it was wartime, as if there's different rules, essentially a form of martial law. Martial law, however, can only exist when there is no operational judiciary. During World War II, there has been an operational judiciary. We've never lost an operational judiciary. But in Obama's Washington, D.C., national trauma that does not lead to inevitability of reform. Representative Carolyn McCarthy, Democrat out of New York, we all know who she is. She lost her husband in the 1993 shooting on a Long Island rail car. She recalled a meeting in 2008 with Crowley when he served on Obama's transition team. Quote, basically, it was me doing all the talking, and you know what? I probably didn't know who the guy was, she said. That didn't make any difference. It was somebody from the White House. McCarthy and Senator Frank Lautenberg, Democrat out of New Jersey, both huge anti-gunners, offered a bill that would ban the, as they call it, clips, that hold large volumes of ammunition. Now, McCarthy said that if the administration continued to stay on the sidelines, she and Lautenberg would get the job done themselves, but added that she, quote, certainly had higher hopes with the administration. Now, Lautenberg attempted to express optimism. The senator recalled that Attorney General Eric Holder, scumbag, visited him on March 29th, quote, and tried to give us his assurance to help us with anti-gun legislation. Well, during his campaign, Obama supported reintroducing the lapsed assault weapons ban, as it were, promised to eliminate an amendment requiring the FBI to destroy records of gun buyers' background checks, and advocated closing the gun show loophole myth. Since taking office, the president has done none of that. So, Democrats who supported him and his anti-gun legislation are just plain ticked off. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come after the break. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back up, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, we all know that some of those popular guns in all of America are the AR-style platform, like an AR-15. Of course, they come in all sorts of designations, but essentially, it's a civilian version of the M16 rifle that the military uses. Some people like to call it an assault rifle, very inaptly named. It does not meet the definition of an assault rifle as originally provided by the Department of Defense. Others call them modern sporting rifles, or MSRs. I like to refer to them as a battle rifle, or a sport utility rifle, or even a counter-assault rifle, because that's the intention of it. Well, the National Sports Shooting Foundation, NSSF, the organization that brings us the SHOT Show every year, they've done a survey detailing 21 findings about what they call the modern sporting rifle owners, the MSR or AR-style platforms. They say that their users are passionate about their AR-style platforms. Say, owners of modern sporting rifles, or MSRs, those rifles based on the AR platform, are among the most passionate of gun owners. Most shoot their rifles often and wish they had time to shoot them even more. Most use them for target shooting. Most own multiple modern sporting rifles. And most enjoy accessorizing them, really. The AR-15 is what they call Barbies for men. It really is. I have taught courses and attended others where we have 30, 40, maybe even 50 AR-15s that are there. No two are alike. They're all accessorized differently, just the way the guns are. Now, given that these and other insights into ownership, it's no wonder why the sport utility rifles were among the hottest sellers during the firearm sales boom of late 2008 through early 2010. With so many of these guns purchased during that period, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, NSSF, the Trade Association for the Firearms and Ammunition Industry, wanted to learn more about the owners' use and attitudes related to these firearms. A survey conducted in 2010 on behalf of NSSF by Sports Marketing Surveys has been compiled into the NSSF Modern Sporting Rifle Comprehensive Consumer Report. The complete survey and description of the methodology used are available at nssf.org, and then you can search it. I think it's a forward slash MSR forward slash facts.cfm. if you want any of that. Let's see. The findings give NSSF a baseline for future research into the ownership and use of these popular sporting firearms, says Jim Kurkuruto, NSSF's Director of Industry Research and Analyst. Our goal was to learn about this category, and we certainly did. Included in the survey findings are these 21, as they call them, fascinating facts about owners of these modern sporting rifles, the AR-15 platform, who responded to the survey. Now, listen, it's pretty interesting. You probably fall into a lot of these. I know I do. 60%, 6 out of 10, of MSR owners that responded to the study own multiple MSRs, with the average being 2.6. Now, I only own one AR platform. That's it, just one. However, I do own a couple of other guns which serve the same purpose. However, they are not an AR platform. 30% of all of these owners, of the AR owners, purchased their first rifle in 2009 or 2010. 3 out of 10, their first AR purchase was 2009 or 2010. That's a pretty impressive percentage. 99% of all AR owners own some type of firearm prior to purchasing their first AR. 99% own something else first. I know I'm in that 99%. 9 out of 10 owned a handgun prior to acquiring their first MSR, and 34%, one-third of those under the age 35, owned a paintball gun before owning their first AR. Nearly half, 44% as they say, of the owners, are current or former military or law enforcement members. It's kind of interesting. 44% are current or former military or law enforcement members. I guess I would fall into that, being a former cop, but I'm not retired. I did the job for a couple years and quit. 51% of the owners of AR-style guns have a shooting range membership. 51% have a membership into a shooting range. Interesting. 8 out of every 10 purchase their MSRs new. Again, AR platform, MSR. What do they call it? A multi-purpose, what do they call it? Modern sporting rifle, MSR. I don't know. 51% have the shooting range membership. 8 out of 10, 80% purchase them new. I purchased mine initially. It's kind of interesting. Mine's a little different. I got my AR actually as a gift, and it was used. And it was chambered in 7.62 by 39. Now, the lower, it doesn't matter. The lower is all the same. It's a short action. But the upper was chambered in 7.62 by 39, which I actually wanted. I wanted to have more of the AK-style round. I wanted a little bit more oomph behind it. Now, a couple years after I had that rifle, I ended up working as a contractor for Department of Defense. Well, I needed to have my own rifle chambered in the standard AR caliber, M16 caliber, 5.56 millimeter or 223. So what I ended up doing was selling my 7.62 by 39 upper and buying a brand new upper for the gun. So part of my gun is used, part of it's old. Part of it's new, part of it's used. That's just the way it is. Let's see, 39% of all AR-style owners purchased their most recent AR at an independent retail store, with the average purchase price being just under $1,100. $1,083 is the average price. 3 out of 4 ARs most recently purchased were chambered in the 223 or 5.56 millimeter. Of course, other offerings, you have the 7.62 by 39, and some rare occasions you have the 308 or 7.62 by 51, 7.62 NATO, the 308 caliber. And you also have the 6.8 SPC, and there's a few others. I think you can even get the Russian 5.45 in an AR platform now, if memory serves correct. Let's see, AR owners consider accuracy and reliability to be the two most important things to consider when buying an AR. Now, for me, reliability is A number one. accuracy is second. I'd much rather have a gun that is incredibly reliable, that gives up a little bit on the accuracy, than one that's incredibly accurate and gives up anything on reliability. I want a gun that's going to run. And considering an AR has so many different moving parts and everything has to work in harmony, and it's rather sensitive to dirt and corrosion and exterior elements, I want it to be much more reliable than accurate. Let's see, 84% of AR owners have at least one accessory on their rifle. 84%. And they spend an average of $436 on aftermarket accessories and customization. That's interesting. 71% of AR owners use a scope or red dot as their primary optic. Older owners prefer scopes. Younger owners prefer the red dots. One-third of AR owners use a 30-plus round magazine most often in their AR. Well, I use 30-round mags, occasionally 20s. The three most owned accessories were a rifle sling at 81%, a soft carrying case, 70%, and a mounted rifle scope, 68%. I have all of the above. 25% of those who own three or more ARs describe their ARs as heavily accessorized, having four-plus accessories. Maybe a scope, a light, a laser, who knows what. Home defense was next. 7.7 out of 10, nearly 8 out of 10. Recreational target shooting, 8.9 out of 10. 7.7 out of 10 for home defense and 6.8 for collecting. Interesting. There's some interesting stuff, guys. We'll see you next week.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.